In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
The Telegraph. The Telegraph. Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Mina Rizuki, standing in for Tom Gibbs, who's still sleeping after the Super Bowl. Welcome to Telegraph Audio Football Club. Jose Mourinho gets the better of Pep Guardiola once again, but was this a Mourinho masterclass or a missed opportunity for Manchester City? Either way, it's good news for Liverpool, who now sit a remarkable 22 points clear. Elsewhere, we take a look over the teams in the relegation battle and assess a quite depressing transfer deadline day. Plus, teenagers tearing it up across the continent and Danny Rose's chippy response to moving to the Northeast. Welcome, welcome. It was obviously the Super Bowl, which means there is no Tom Gibbs. And I did stay up to watch it because I absolutely love it. Since all three of you, I assume no one bothered staying up. No?
How come you can do the pod and you watched it and Tom can't?
He goes hard, I think.
Yeah, I think
well,
so.
Well, what's he done that you haven't done?
Maybe because, like, he's, I don't know. I
mean, maybe slaughter him. You look great. You've still come in. You're a soldier. You. Tom's not.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, I don't know what it is that Tom does that I don't, but that was the voice of Matt Law. Hello, Matt. How
Hi.
Are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
So you're all preppy and awake then this morning?
I'm not prepped. I am awake, but I have a banana and a coffee. Oh, and I'll wing it. I do need a wee as
subscribe
well.
Subscribe to The Telegraph today.
this is just like pulsating stuff. We also have JJ Bull in the house. How are you, JJ?
I'm really good. I got in from Aberdeen this morning at about 3 a.m.
You know, for someone who's
in
enjoys,
the office at 8.
Wow.
Yeah.
World's smallest violin.
I mean, if you were here at 3, like, I just feel like you should watch the Super Bowl, right? Because if you love tactics.
But I'm not American and I don't watch the NFL.
Right, the other person here, Sam Dean. How are you, love?
I've slept pretty well.
Did you?
I had a day off yesterday.
That's good.
So all of the complaints other people have got, I do not share.
You've got prep too.
I've also got prep. I've got some stats. I like to deliver some stats.
You've got Matt, with your little banana open and your coffee, I mean, it's just the most unprofessional thing on the planet. But let's start off, shall we? Because there was an exciting game yesterday. Matt, don't worry. Even at your most unprofessional, you're still the best voice. You were at the game. Check this out.
I'm so unprofessional. I got a mouthful of banana. Yeah, I was at the game.
How was it?
This is a weird podcast so far.
A really weird game. Well, it's a weird game as well. So that's a lovely link. Really weird game.
Was it? Was it?
Like they got Tottenham got battered in the first half. Didn't have a shot until they scored. Finished up with 3 shots and 2 goals. Manchester City had about 18 shots.
So this was a very Mourinho-like game then.
It kind of was. Yeah, I didn't think it was like fell into the Mourinho masterclass because they did get lucky. I mean, they did. City
missed the sending off.
They got lucky. They got lucky in that City missed a penalty. They got lucky in that I thought the second VAR on Raheem Sterling was another penalty.
Did?
Yeah, I did. Ah.
Save VAR chant.
Yeah, for sure. And they got lucky that. City had a player sent off when they were all over them, and they just couldn't. Both the finishing and the final balls were City. It just wouldn't happen for them. But you know, all power to Tottenham and Mourinho. It's a massive result for them, and that was probably the only way they were going to win. You know, sit deep, hope that City had an off day and that some luck went against them, and take advantage of it. And they did. I mean, I'm going to call him Bergervan for the season. Is that all right?
Bergwijn.
Well, I'm going Bergervan.
I like Bergwijn too.
Bergervan, brilliant, brilliant finish. And Son, brilliant finish.
Brilliant control though as well with the chest and everything. Tell me, JJ, was it a defensive masterclass or do you, like Matt, agree that it was not that?
I agree with everything Matt has said. There's not, I mean, there's nothing really that Mourinho did with his setup for his team that Sean Dyche didn't for Burnley against Arsenal. Same thing, you sit in a block and you try and counter, you gain territory, and then use set pieces to try and get what you can.
Is this your way of moving on to the next game?
No, not at all. Right, okay. But then I don't think Guardiola did anything wrong either. Like, it just sometimes you don't, just because you've lost the game doesn't mean you've necessarily done something wrong. I think that there is a few pundits and people saying things that I agree with about City, that they're lacking that kind of final ball. It seems a bit of a mentality issue there. Guardiola's had to rely on a lot of players this season because they can't just keep buying millions every single time, but a lot of players are sort of letting them down a wee bit, and they'll definitely need to do something in the summer and bring some new in and change it around.
I have no way of sort of proving this, but I just got the impression watching them yesterday, the result actually didn't matter that much to them. I mean, clearly, I know you can see that afterwards, but the title's gone.
Yeah.
And it felt like they wanted to score goals, they wanted to play well, but there wasn't that just little bit of percent that mattered.
That's it. I think it's like that little 2-3% of difference that makes them what they were before, and it's just not.
Yeah,
in there.
It almost felt like you were watching like the Harlem Globetrotters, where they're there to entertain you. They are there to sort of score goals and look amazing. They weren't necessarily there to win, which kind of sounds stupid, but it just didn't seem to have that edge.
There's like even individual examples I can think of that exact thing where like the first goal is a corner. They've got 10 men at the time, sure enough, so it's hard to get into your right shape. But the ball goes short, it goes back to the edge of the box, and then City players are just slightly slower to go towards a man on the ball than they usually were. And then when Bergvine gets his chance to contest it, there's just a little bit of space beside him that wouldn't normally be, I think, if they were all revved up. And they like Otamendi making that stupid error for the second goal, stepping out when he shouldn't have done. Just little individual errors.
He's been doing that all season.
Yeah, there's less concentration all over the place. I don't know what...
Have they got a Sterling issue?
Well, this is... Just before anything, I guess it goes to show you how amazing certain coaches are and Sir Alex Ferguson or whoever that can continue to motivate a squad every single season, even if something is too far gone.
There's a reason why no one's done it three times on the trot. Mm-hmm. Ferguson didn't do it three times on the trot.
Well, but Zidane did it with Madrid in the Champions League for three times in a trot.
That's not a league season.
Yeah, knockout's different than a league. Yeah.
Champions League is harder. But this is one question that I will have for you, Sam, is you're saying there's a Sterling problem. Mm. Why?
I think that's now 8 games without a goal. He could have been sent off yesterday. Probably.
Do you think he should have been?
I think, yes, probably should have been. And then even the chance that Gundogan put over when they had the open goal, the sort of calamitous one when everyone sort of hit each other and fell over. It was just a really poor pass at like a key moment. And that's something that he's really sort of ironed out of his game in the last 2 years. At those decisive moments, he tends to deliver. And I think in the last 6 weeks or so, that seems to have evaporated. I mean, the suggestion that he's just played too much, which may well be the case, but Pep's very much strongly refuted that. But it does seem like there's an issue with his form, at least.
He's lost his confidence for a goal a little bit because he must know that he misses these easy chances. They don't seem to come natural to him scoring open goals even. That seems the thing he's not good at. He's really good at taking people on, driving at teams, pushing them back, using all his space and doing his little tricks and that. But when he gets into positions to score, like I remember we were talking about, was it this season or last season when Bernardo played in his place on the left and scored a hat trick? It's not just that Sterling's really, he's a great player, but it's a lot to do with the position he plays in and the way that team works around him that they get all these goals. And you see him just now, he doesn't seem to trust his final shot to actually score, and then will look for the pass first instead. So they're often giving up opportunities when they should just be sticking it in. Someone was saying yesterday about how it's almost like how Arsenal became in a while. They got so used to passing and tip-tap-tap that they forgot they actually had to use the passing to get to a certain point to shoot.
Sam's just pointed out Man United did win the league 3 times on the trot. So I've got to offer you a fulsome apology there, Mina.
Thank you very much. And Sam, especially thank you for pointing that out.
I didn't want to call you out on air.
I'd call myself out on air. Oh,
but he's happy to call me out on air when it does. But, you know, again, never mind. I just want to ask you if he's all in now on Champions League, Pep.
He said he is. He pretty much said he is.
He said if he doesn't win it, he would have been a failure. I agree with him, but you obviously don't.
Failure is such a harsh word for someone who's done what he's done.
Yeah. It is such a harsh
word.
And
he's saying that he knows he'll be judged like that, which is true. He's not saying he is a failure. I don't think he thinks he's a failure. He doesn't win it. He wants to win it. But it's like people will say, like the media, us, will say that he has failed his remit.
I do think...
I think progression is important, but I think that's all that one expects.
I think 22 points behind Liverpool is poor. There shouldn't be 22 points behind Liverpool. I mean, when Man United... I'm going to get another Man U stat wrong now, aren't I? When Man United finished second under Jose, were they 19 points behind? And everyone mocks the fact that Jose sort of called that, you know, a bit of a title challenge, and the fact that they finished second, it was never a title challenge. And being 22 points behind now is not a title challenge. They haven't challenged for the title this season, which, given the resources and everything, they're allowed a season off. They're allowed not to win the title every season. But I think 22 points behind is embarrassing for them.
I really enjoyed your exchange with Pep yesterday during the press conference.
Yeah, well, I'm getting different reactions to that, I should say. Yes. Manchester City fans seem to think I've been disrespectful for Pep for asking him to verbalise his answer rather than just nod his answer. I should say it was all done in the midst of a bit of a joke.
Yeah, I watched it I watched the video back, and I thought that was quite...
Some of the video jovial. Cuts it
Can
quite
Can you explain
short.
What happened? Yeah. To
so,
happened?
So what happened, I asked four questions at the press conference yesterday. I asked a question on Jose saying Sterling should have been sent off, and Guardiola refused to answer that. I then asked him... okay, so you're not... I don't want an answer on Jose's reaction, but can you give me your opinion on the Sterling incident? He didn't want to answer that. Fine. I then asked him about Sterling's injury, and he said he couldn't answer that. So I was kind of having a bit of fun now, because I was kind of saying, I'm still owed a question here, because I don't really feel I've got an answer. So I was hugging the microphone. I said, right, I want one more question then. So then I asked him if he's conceding the title, and he smiled and gave me this kind of wide-eyed look and nodded his head at me, and I hadn't had an answer up till now, and I needed something to write in the paper, so I said, can you say it rather than just nod it? I can't quote a nod. And people laughed, and he seemed to smile, and he gave me a good quote. You know, he gave me a good quote that Liverpool are unstoppable.
He's quite good about these things, usually,
yeah. And I thought it was all very light-hearted and all very nice, and then, as I say, Manchester City fans have seen it and taken it as disrespect, and it certainly wasn't meant as any disrespect.
Okay, let's move to the other half of the table. Bournemouth now with back-to-back league wins. They did manage a win over, it was Aston Villa, who, let's be honest, JJ,
league
you
cup
think,
finalists Aston Villa.
Yes, although JJ, you
league
believe
cup
that
finalists
there's a
Aston Villa.
League cup finalist Aston
Thank
Villa.
You.
Now, JJ, you think that there are potential side, they're a side that could potentially go down. Is this something that we should applaud Bournemouth for, or is it just Villa? I'm just trying to annoy
them.
You.
I mean, they're roughly in the same. Well, they're next to each other in the table. So if you play, those two teams played each other 10 times, it'll be a different result each time, I would have thought. They're not. I don't know what to make of it.
I was there.
Okay.
I enjoyed
Tell
it.
Us
yeah,
about
you know.
It.
Bournemouth played quite well. They, particularly in the first half, they really played with an intensity and energy which they've been lacking until they beat Brighton a week ago. And they're a very streaky team, Bournemouth. They always have been under Howe, and they sort of go for these funks where they go about 8 games without winning, and then will put 3 or 4 wins together and suddenly bounce out of trouble again. And I think they're in the midst of that. I mean, they've got their players back from injury. They had so many injuries before Christmas, and they're all coming back slowly. So they're sort of just sort of reverting to their mean, I think.
Do you think they'll survive?
Yeah, I think they will. Villa, I'm less sure about. I thought Villa were quite poor in the first half, and it was just... I know this is not controversial, and Matt has seen them far more than me, but it was quite striking just how much everything went through Grealish. Like, no one else offered anything at all going forward. And I looked at that and thought, I hope it's not like this every week, because it was just like, more than I've seen it all season, was their one, you know, reliance on one player. And then second half, Lerma got sent off pretty early on in the second half, and they didn't really create enough chances from that. You'd expect them to do more in the subsequent 35 minutes playing against 10 men. They didn't really
They've
create
lost
much.
3 times to 10 men this season. Which
Are
is
you worried, Matt?
Really annoying. Yeah, I am. I've been sort of worried for ages. It's going to be close. It's going to be really tight.
But I think that, well...
They still average a point a game. I said at the start of the season, I don't think I said it on here, but I said it somewhere, I said... the best they can probably hope for is a bit more than averaging a point a game. They've averaged a point a game at the moment. If they continue on that, they'll have a chance. If you get 38 points, it's going to be a high points total this season that goes down. If they ended with 38, they'll have a chance of staying up.
They've got a good record against teams in the bottom half, haven't they?
Not away from home, though. That's the point. Their away form, shocking, absolutely shocking.
They seem to beat teams around them at home.
At home, they do. I mean, they've all got tough run-ins. It's going to be. I just think it's going to be really tight. I actually think Bournemouth will yo-yo back and forth between being in the bottom three. I think that sort of bottom five are the bottom five now in various different orders until the last game.
Should we be worried about West Ham, because they've got a really tough fixture list coming up and they threw away 3 points against Brighton? They're facing Man City, Liverpool, Southampton, Arsenal, Wolves and Spurs coming up. How much trouble are they in?
Loads. Massive trouble. That was a terrible result for them at the weekend, having led 2-0 and 3-1, because that would have been a huge win. All I would say to give West Ham fans a bit of hope is, quite traditionally over the last few years, they are a club and a team who tend to go and pick up a result against a big team. I mean, they went to Stamford Bridge this season in terrible form and somehow beat Chelsea. I remember the year they went to Old Trafford and either drew or won to stay up. They've got this history of, they were the first team to win at Tottenham's new stadium last season. They've got this weird history of suddenly picking up results against big clubs. So that's a bit of hope for them. But I'd be really worried if I was West Ham.
It does feel like remarkable that they're so reliant on players like Antonio, Snodgrass and Mark Noble still. I mean, given the amount of money they've spent and the players they have, I mean, that squad on paper, and you guys might disagree, but that for me, that squad on paper is good enough to be challenging for 7th or 8th.
Yeah, I agree.
If not for the top 6 to an extent. But you look at it and this weekend it's okay, we're relying on Snodgrass and Antonio, and all this money you spent, all these players you brought in, what are they doing? Where have they gone? Why are they so rubbish? You know, is this I know there's an inbuilt problem at the club that players just...
Well, for instance, they bought Haller for a club record and yet they've played him up front on his own all season.
Yeah.
Now,
despite the fact that he came from a club in which that was never done.
I don't think he's ever played on his own up front. He's either always played in a 2 or a 3. So, he struggled, and the system clearly doesn't suit him. So it doesn't look like a lot of thought has gone into that signing.
And Yarmolenko,
and yet, and also, when you say they've spent, when they've brought players in, they've got no other strikers. Their squad, sometimes you can look at their squad and think they've got a much better squad than their position in the table. And yet it's such an imbalanced squad. It's ridiculously
imbalanced. Their defending, to be honest, that I'm most shocked at all the time. I find their defending to be...
Their fullbacks are appalling.
Really, really bad. It's
and
really
they,
bad.
They
defending.
Never sort that out. I mean, they didn't get a right back in January, which really surprised me.
What about Watford, JJ? Do you think the Nigel Pearson effect is wearing off?
No, I think they'll be fine. It's just Everton are another one of these teams that should be doing better than they are. Watford, I think, will get out of that little hole. And I mean, it was set pieces that let them down in this game. Yerry Mina got 2, and you'd think that Pearson would address that and get them forward. I think a lot of them are playing really well. Diolafeu, that I say you say his name, isn't it? Whichever it is.
Bergwijn.
I like all these names. They just look really nice. I think it's interesting that since Troy Deeney has come back, that coincided with when Pearson came in, and that makes a huge difference to how they play. They've got a kind of physical threat up front, which is... I mean, for the start of the season, they were playing players like Andre Gray, they were playing Roberto Pereira, they were playing Danny Welbeck, just players who can't lead that line on their own. They're just not good enough, flat out, they're not good enough. And if they're not good enough to score whatever, they have to at least offer something. And Deeney gives them not only a goal threat, but also defenders hate him. And they get close because they're worried what he's going to do, and then he bullies them, and that creates space for someone else. And they're just much better in attack straight away, which makes them better defensively as well. So although they lost to Everton, it is just those little errors that set pieces. I mean, out it, they might have been okay. They'll be all right.
What about Burnley, Sam? I thought that was a great point against Arsenal.
Should have been 3.
Should have been 3, absolutely.
Well, yeah, this is my question. So would you say they're safe, or would you include them in the bracket of potential?
No, I think Burnley are safe. They currently got the same amount of points as Arsenal, which is quite indeed. We're not discussing Arsenal in the relegation battle, but maybe we should be. It was terrible. I watched it and just sort of tried to tear my eyes out. It was dreadful.
Completely pointless watching it.
It was awful. Like, it's one of those where you sort of want to stop watching, but you think, if I stop watching, something might happen, and then nothing does happen, and you just regret throwing away 2 hours of your life. They were really bad for 20 minutes, Burnley, and Arsenal quite good, and then it flipped for an hour, and then Arsenal finished quite strongly the last 5 minutes. But, I mean, watching that, it felt to me like two mid-table teams, just having a mid-table game at the end of a busy period, quite tired, in a windy day when it wasn't great pitch conditions, and they just sort of meandered to a draw.
Talk to me about Mikel Arteta, because I haven't seen as much of Arsenal under him as you, obviously. Mm. And as an outsider looking in, and as quite a critical outsider, he's won one game, and I don't, from an outside, just from looking at results and the odd bits of highlights and stuff, I don't really see much difference.
There is definitely... there's definitely a difference in terms of performance and style and structure and actually having a plan. Arsenal keep drawing games, and they kept drawing games before. They've actually lost the same number of games this season as City and Leicester. They don't lose that often, but they don't win enough either. They're pretty much just relentless drawers. They've got 13 draws this season, which is remarkable. And when they were drawing under Emery at the start of the season, so Watford away, you think of Southampton at home, they were drawing games that were totally chaotic, and you'd leave thinking, how do they get a point out of that? Now they're drawing games that are far more balanced, if not slightly more in Arsenal's favour. So the draws feel different.
Although Burnley should have won.
Burnley should have won. Yeah, that was I thought Burnley were a better team. But there have been other games under Arteta where they've played quite well for quite long periods, which they never really did under Emery at all.
Chelsea was pretty chaotic.
Yeah, they're 10 men for... now.
I know, I'm just, these are the games that I'm seeing. I'm just presenting.
What he's definitely done is fix the defence. That's definitely true. Mm. They're conceding way less goals, way fewer goals, and they're looking far more solid as a structure. But he's not got their attack to gel at all, and he's playing Aubameyang left, and Lacazette's having a nightmare.
Let's move to Chelsea, because we should just rattle through the rest of the games. Rudiger scores two. Do they need a striker, Matt?
That was a really interesting game, because on Friday, Lampard made it very clear he was unhappy with how January had gone. Then he drops the world's most expensive goalkeeper, who Chelsea...
What did you think of that, actually?
Well, just let me finish. Then he drops Kepa, the world's most expensive goalkeeper. Then when he makes a substitution, he doesn't bring on Batshuayi. He reverts to a false nine. It all felt a very pointed 24 hours. Very sort of Antonio Conte-esque or something like that, or Jose Mourinho-esque. It really felt that he spent that 24 hours making points.
What was the point?
The point was that he wanted some signings from January and didn't get them. And so, you know, he was going to demonstrate that maybe he didn't have the resources he felt he needed.
JJ, is Henderson the world's greatest midfielder?
He is... fundamental to Liverpool, which is one of the best teams I've ever seen play. He's not the best midfielder, but yeah, he's essential. He's one of those players that is not technically the best, but yet he is absolutely good enough to play for one of the top teams. He just makes other people around him much better. He's a captain.
So he's good for Liverpool.
Yeah.
Is he going to be really great for any other team, or is it more of a Liverpool
team? I don't think he'll lead England to glory, but I think because he's surrounded by so many players.
Though. He is important for
England. Yeah, because he brings that same mentality that you need, but England don't have good players as Liverpool do, and they don't play as nice football. But he's surrounded by amazing talent, but he is the guy in the centre of it all that keeps it all hooked together. Like, if he's not there, I don't know what happens.
Klopp talks.
Falls apart. I think he's brilliant, Henderson.
Klopp talks a lot about principles and how Liverpool success is built on having the same principles. And when you bring in a youth team player or Curtis Jones or whatever, they have the same principles. And I think Henderson is the most obvious sort of on pitch leader of those, having those principles. I think
he is in the whole. There's not many like him. He's quite old school. Mm-hmm. He's got that kind of John Terry attributes of captaincy. He's very sort of old school captaincy, you know, leading from his character as much as his performance.
And then a team all
leaders.
I mean,
Man City, having this is a huge thing with City, having lost Kompany. Yeah. City just don't really seem to have that. And while people would laugh at you to say that, you know, Jordan Henderson would improve City, certainly his leadership would.
What about United? They don't have a Henderson. They don't have very much of any sort of leader really in the middle. But they do have Fernandes. Do you guys have any good first impressions from him? It was 0-0 against Wolves.
I don't really get the... This is based on seeing him twice last season in the Europa League and didn't do anything. So I was kind of a bit nonplussed by the signing. As we know, United's problems run a lot deeper than one or two signings. And I think he's clearly an improvement on Andreas Pereira. So that can only be a good thing.
I think you're an improvement on Andreas Pereira, to be fair. So.
But the deeper malaise is not going to stop. And the evidence of the transfer window, and in particular the last 2 days of the transfer window, only sort of shone a further light on the problems at the top of the club.
Oh, the transfer window. It's exactly what I want to talk about. Just before we move on, well done to Chris Wilder, Sheffield United, yet again. What a legend.
Hello, football fans. My name's Danny Boyle, and I'm the Telegraph's Commuter Editions editor, which means it's my job to provide you with great journalism that makes your journey to and from work as enjoyable as possible. I can't prevent train delays or guarantee you won't get caught in the rain, but I can make sure you're up to date with the best of the Telegraph every morning and evening. My colleague Chris Price and I produce briefings to bring you up to speed in just 2 minutes at both ends of the day. Now, they're also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Just search The Briefing or follow the link in the show notes to this episode.
Okay, so this was an interesting transfer window because it was non-interesting in many ways. The lowest spend in the Premier League since 2010. Now, we were hoping for lots of action at the last minute, and there were some things, but are clubs generally being more responsible now over the winter market because there aren't these wonderful bargains to find?
Well, the market's mental. I mean, you're paying something like £50 million for Bruno Fernandes, who's probably a £20 million player. Well, Harry Maguire's a set. What did he cost again? £80 million or something? Mm. It's just made up. You can't stand. You can do with it. You've got players like Joe Ellington's 40 million. He's a 15, 20 million pound player. It's just kind of broken, so there's no value. And you look like Lampard's annoyed with players who didn't get in at Chelsea. I'd imagine that their business people there looking at it would go, well, they're in fourth. We're probably going to be able to finish fourth here. Third's maybe out of reach. Is it really worth investing the 100 million it takes to get anyone better than what we've already got in to stay in the same place? It doesn't make financial sense. There's no real way to do it. And then a lot of teams are reverting to relying on things like coaching and their youth academies, which they've also spent hundreds of millions of pounds on. So I don't know what you're supposed to do in the market.
The market was stuck as well. It's completely stuck. It was stuck at the top end, because I think JJ might have spoken about this before. The wages that the top clubs now pay make it so difficult to sell players. Like, you look at the Cavani, no one could go near that Cavani deal because his wages were just like astronomical. So the market, the top end, gets stuck on the wages. And then the other problem that the Premier League had for January was that there are so many clubs still fearful of relegation. Even, you know, your Newcastles, they're not going to sell players. And they're not going to sell players to each other. So that's half the league who won't sell players to each other. So the market just gets absolutely stuck.
Let's peel the onion that is Chelsea. Why didn't Lampard get the players that he wanted?
Well, they started the window wanting sort of long-term targets and real kind of stellar targets, people like your Timo Werners, your Jadon Sanchos, and they quite quickly realised they just weren't going to be able to get them in January. Then, as we got to the final two weeks...
Why? Is it financial?
No, well, if you bid £200 million for Jadon Sancho, you'd get him in January. But for any sort of half, well, not sensible price, but half acceptable price, that you just couldn't buy them. You couldn't buy Jadon Sancho for 100 million in January, put it that way.
Is Chelsea the place that players would want to go to, such as Jadon?
Jadon Sancho certainly would. He's got a lot of friends at Chelsea. Mm-hmm. And he would kind of play every week, and you know. But then they entered the last 2 weeks and they sort of changed strategy a little bit. And decided to start looking at different places in the market, like your Cavani's, like your Dries Mertens. And there were just different reasons. They couldn't physically do it. And then where I thought they showed some intelligence and like they have progressed slightly as a club is at the end of the window, they were starting to get offered people like Ighalo, Rondon suddenly got offered to them very closely. And in past windows, they've signed Patos, Falcaos. Higuain was a bit different. And they've panicked and gone for those, and it's been a waste of time. And they didn't panic this time. Now, Lampard, understandably, is not happy that they've done nothing, and I get that. I also get from the club's point of view that they're saying, if we can't get our top targets, let's wait, let's do what Liverpool did on Van Dijk, and we'll take the criticism, and we'll take the gamble that it affects this season, and for the short-term pain, hopefully there'll be some long-term gain. What they've got to do now, though, what they've absolutely got to do for Lampard, this is what I think has to be the trade-off, is they've got to do business early in the summer and let him have pre-season with players and sort of reward him, as it were, that way.
Well, that sounds all very clever to me. What about United? Kind of seems all over the place. It was first John Schicking, now Gino Gallo.
I quite like it. The reason I like it...
A lot of people I know actually like it as well.
It's not going to change United. Like, Solskjaer are sticking to this plan. They're building long. Bruno Fernandes, they've looked at for a long time. I think I've read that they were looking at him in 2015 even. But Joshua King used to play for Man United, so he's got a vested interest. He's also not really played at a level above Bournemouth, so that would be a huge step up. So that would be the kind of player that you want to get in, that mentality where you're driving to try and, you know, you're now at your pinnacle, now you go somewhere. And Ighalo is a Man United fan. So again, we'll play for more than just the money. So this is the kind of thinking. This is what I think Solskjaer's thinking. He's trying to put a culture in, and that must be part of the scouting. So that of all the players in the world,
they haven't scouted Ighalo. They wanted. If they'd scouted Ighalo, they wouldn't have gone through with 4 hours to go of the transfer window.
Honestly, they probably have gone down through a football manager list and then seen like who supports Man United, who's playing striker, who's playing the Premier League, who's scoring the Premier League. He was highly rated before he went to China. Like,
he scored one goal in 18 Premier League appearances his last season for Watford in the Premier League. He's 30 years old and he comes from a country which is currently in lockdown because of coronavirus. I mean, there's so many reasons not to buy this player.
Let's point this out. He played in the Africa Cup of Nations. He was top scorer there with 5 goals, even managing more than the likes of Mane. Top scorer in that tournament, got Nigeria to third place. Maybe there's something in it.
I don't think he'll necessarily be a bad signing for them, but the fact that they've had to go to him on the last day, having known since about April or May last year that Lukaku was leaving, is absolutely remarkable. And for a club that supposedly looked at more than 800 right-backs before buying Wan-Bissaka, trying to sort of present themselves as this, you know, all-encompassing strategy and scouting network. Mm. I mean, it just screams incompetence to me.
Yeah, I do agree with that. But
is it like as incompetent as... what do you guys make of Cedric to Arsenal?
Oh, I actually think this one is quite... I know it's very unsexy and unglamorous, but I think it's quite sensible. He's only on about £65,000 a week. The loan fee is less than £1 million. He can play right back or left back. Yesterday, Bukayo Saka got injured. They need a left back. Mm-hmm. They're short in the fullback positions. Arteta wants specialists there rather than converted midfielders. And that seems to tick all those boxes for me. And he's not going to cost any money in the summer if they want to get him. If they don't, they can tell him, thanks very much, go away.
Is he on loan?
He's on loan.
Is his knee ligament not...
Yeah, he's out for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So that one makes more sense to me. The other one Arsenal brought in was Pablo Mari, the centre back, which I would suggest is a bit more, what's the word? Bit more rogue, yeah. I mean, this guy has basically had 4 good months his entire career. He was sold by Man City for £1 million last summer. They didn't see much value in him. So I think that one's probably more. Let's see what happens to that one.
Let's see, indeed. Meanwhile, let's have some European music. Okay, this is the part where I talk to myself, guys, but I'm going to try to bring it in with you. The talking point over the weekend was Madrid won over Atletico Madrid. It's been interesting because Real Madrid now find themselves at the top of the league, 3 points ahead of Messi's Barcelona. They're a side that fell apart last year, had 3 different coaches, obviously, but Zidane is really getting the best out of his kids. Vinicius Junior, Rodrigo, Valverde, name it, and he's done it. And yet the headline news was Gareth Bale was left out of the squad for this game. And lots of people were talking about this. I don't know whether it was Marca or AS, but one of the writers on it said it would be very irresponsible to include Bale in this because, you know, once again, Bale, it doesn't look like he's very committed to the cause. And he played a game in the Copa del Rey, got a minor strain, and then hasn't really been playing since. And they want to focus more on the players that seem to be wanting to die for the shirt than a guy who just seems to maybe perhaps go out or not really care so much about what's going on in Real Madrid. So it's interesting. Either way, I don't know how much we should really criticise Zidane. Zidane said that he's relying on him for the rest of the season, that he really believes in Bale. But at the same time, it seems like he also doesn't want to give him too much headline news, and yet he continues to steal them.
Another player, like Matt mentioned, another player trapped by his wages. Not trapped, but he's not going to go anywhere because of his wages.
Yeah, he's really suffering.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, traps yeah. Very
should
much.
He,
the wrong
should he take the pay cut and just move
earns
somewhere
more every
else?
Day than I will my entire life.
Bunkered by his wages.
Lukaku, meanwhile, is having the time of his life at Inter. He scored a brace. There was no Lautaro Martinez because he's out for two games after getting a red card. Inter are still 3 points behind Juventus. Juventus, of course, do have Ronaldo, who scored in his 9th Serie A game in a row, which is a record for Juve. Only Trezeguet has hit. So he's matched that record. But we know that he's capable of even more. Questions are being asked of whether or not he's found his groove with Maurizio Sarri. I don't think that's what it is. I think that he's fit again. And so he's happy to show off his ability to play the game, I guess. But as for Sarri, there's still tons of question marks because they won over Fiorentina with a 3-0 victory. But it was two penalties by Ronaldo. Yes.
Did Inter Milan sign a striker in the end?
No, they didn't.
Wow. And then Martinez gets injured.
Martinez isn't injured.
Oh,
he's got a red card.
Sorry.
Yeah, suspended. So he'll be back. Sanchez will be back.
No, I know. I'm just kind of thinking it through in my head. Conte will be going bonkers that they didn't get a striker, and then Martinez.
It's okay.
Is
he's
out.
Got loads of ex-Premier League.
No,
players.
I know. We've discussed this load. I'm just kind of thinking out loud.
But Lazio wanted Giroud too, so it was like this very interesting thing.
Well, Inter Milan, I mean, we talk about the English clubs who didn't get strikers, but Inter Milan had been trying for strikers, didn't get one. Barcelona didn't get strikers, did they?
They didn't get Richarlison.
Yeah, I'm not sure that was ever really happening, was it? So the European clubs seem to have had similar problems to the English clubs.
Yeah, it's been
there
hard.
There aren't many strikers. Jason Burt wrote a column on this.
Yeah.
There are not many strikers around. There just aren't many.
I'm interested to see how Piontek does in the Bundesliga. Obviously, the best striker who moved in the market was Haaland. Continues to score non-stop for Borussia Dortmund. I mean, if there was ever a match made in heaven, it was the team that's been desperate for the skills of somebody like a Haaland, you know, a proper number nine, and they got exactly what they're looking for, and they're reaping the benefits. He's chosen a perfect league, a perfect club for him. And you can see that, but sadly not everyone can have this match made in heaven.
How long do you reckon it'll be till he goes then?
I think they could get a massive bid in the summer.
Yeah.
Apparently his release clause comes in 2021 something like that. So then he would be able to sign him for 70 million, I think something like that. But that would mean he gets a season and a half, right, in Bundesliga, and then he can go for all the money.
I could still see someone bidding more than that this summer.
Yeah,
if he carries on
I'd
the way
bid 100 if I could.
I mean, I don't know why every single top club wasn't like really, really in for him.
I think
no, every
were.
Single top club was.
I know.
Juventus were.
Oh, right, Chelsea were. I mean, I wish I'd have known it at the time to write. I didn't.
Yeah.
But I do know it now.
A lot in. But he's clever.
If they were all actual bids and Salzburg took less money than they could have got from someone else, was it a release clause that he got to Dortmund that they matched 17 million or something like that?
The Raiola thing's huge as well. I mean, we've got to be careful what we say on here. But in terms of how you deal with Raiola is a massive part of whether you get that player. Probably all I can say.
That is
interesting.
That is indeed true, which is why you should always keep all the agents very happy. Meanwhile, let's move on to the social question. So after his loan to Newcastle was agreed, Danny Rose declared delight at the move north, as there's only one decent chippy in London. With that in mind, what is the best food you've had as a punter at the football?
What is the one decent chippy he's talking about? London? I know loads.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter. Well.
Should maybe do a little bit of a list, you know, so that we can all like...
Yeah.
Or send it over to him. Richard has come back with jellied eels outside Upton Park Tube Station. Was it an outpost of Tubby Isaac's stall on Commercial Road?
Jellied eels.
Mm. Not for me, Clive.
I've never tried one. They might be delicious.
Stephen says, I was working in the south of France a few years back and we went to watch the football non-league team... I don't know how to pronounce this name, Hires play. Got a bottle of wine and cheese baguette for less than a fiver. Sun was shining too. Oh, France. That's what good. A beautiful country.
Bottle of wine and cheese baguette.
Mm, that's quite nice, no?
That'd be great to watch football with that.
Mm. I usually have a Kit Kat when I'm in the middle of Turin because unfortunately the timings for dinner and lunch never coincide with when I'm free. Anyone else?
In terms of our best, there is, genuinely, I've only been there once, there's genuinely an amazing fish and chip shop next to Grimsby Town's ground. Is it still Blundell Park or is it called something else these days? No one knows.
What, do locations just change their names?
No, well, stadiums.
Oh, stadiums, sorry.
It could be the mobile phone networking arena.
Right, I see. Sorry.
They've genuinely got an incredible, as they should, they're famous for fish and chips, but this place, even though, you know, attendances aren't massive at Grimsby, or certainly weren't the day I went, the queue going down the road for this place was well worth it. There's a great jerk chicken place near Crystal Palace. Definitely worth visiting.
I feel like there are loads of like amazing like Turkish
If you go to the Midlands, always try to find somewhere with a Balti pie. They're pretty special. Just trying to think off the top of my head.
Yeah.
White Hart Lane had some great things next to it.
Well, in our position as journalists, you're really fortunate to get food at the stadiums when you go into the press. And some of the places are really, really good. Chelsea's food de Leon is really decent, I thought. I love a tawdry pie. That's all I need. All you need to watch football is a pie in a Bovril. That's it.
Oh my God, this is like so depressing for me.
I got a pastel de nata in Lisbon last season. That wasn't really that was like more for lunch.
Sort of like
went
a pie.
To the game in the evening, so it wasn't like a pre-game. Yeah, that was good. But the worst one I've ever had was in the Borisov Arena. I thought it was just a normal hamburger, but you know, like a chicken burger is a different colour, like slightly more like pale.
Yeah.
It was a bit like that, but it didn't taste like chicken.
And what was it?
I don't know, because obviously the alphabet's different in Ukraine, so I literally have no idea what I ordered.
Is it made with 90% real animal?
I have no idea, my friend, but it wasn't chicken and it wasn't beef. And I still think back to that as the worst pre-match meal I've had in my life.
So it didn't taste all that good, huh?
Oh, no.
Did you eat it all?
Oh, yeah. Long, cold night in Belarus. You need your fuel.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Do they have pies in Italy?
No. Well, I mean, I guess they do. They have to, right?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
I've never eaten a pie, but in Italy it's
Whatever.
Really weird. No.
You've never eaten a pie?
Are we still going? Yeah, you've never had any sort of pie in any country.
No, I will never eat a pie either.
Why not?
The sheer look of it disgusts me.
They're amazing.
Me.
Yeah.
I know, they tell me this all the time, but I just can't bring myself to
This is
to
worse
eat one.
Than your revelation that you didn't know who Blur were.
Personally, you know very well I know who Blair are. But this is being genuine in the sense that I honestly have never had a pie.
Brought one in for you, would you
I've never had Bovril
it?
Either. I just can't. Like, I just see these things and I just want to cry. It's the same with gravy.
It's different if you watch football in like really cold places. Like in Aberdeen, you can't even feel your feet. And it's so cold, you don't know how to walk back to the car. And you have a Bovril and a pie. It's great. That's
if we bring a pie in, will you eat
Russian
it on
I have Russian ancestry
air?
And I still wouldn't do it. Even if I'm in the middle of the snow.
We're not talking like pucker pie in a plastic wrapper. Yeah. We're talking like a nice pie.
Like what kind of pie?
Like a craft pie done by an actual bakery.
Oh my God, no,
Like a nice chicken and mushroom. I like a chicken and mushroom pie.
I also hate carbs.
You have cake for breakfast every day.
Yeah, but cake is not really carbs.
Can we just cut off just on I hate carbs? That'd be a brilliant end.
Thank you for listening. Contact the podcast, afcpodcast@telegraph.co.uk. We'll read out the best of what you send us. Subscribe to the podcast, search for Telegraph Audio Football Club. Thanks to Joel Grove and thanks to you, our listener.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.